Every individual must learn what it means to be human, and this understanding begins developing in early childhood. What matters most for our youngest children is how we are with them, how we show them what kindness, empathy, and respect look like. They are following their leaders. Welcome to the Leading for Children podcast. We're excited you're here with us today as we explore number 9 of the 11 simple rules to create thriving communities for children. Meaningful. I'm Judy Jablon, founder and strategic advisor at Leading for Children. Joining me in this conversation are my dear friends and colleagues, our new ED, Nicole Parks, Jill Gunderman, and Julia Connolly. Nicole?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Nicole Parks, and I am the Executive Director of Leading for Children and a wife, a mom, a grandmother, and an aunt to many nieces and nephews. Jill?
Thanks, Nicole. Hi, I'm Jill Gunderman. I am the Associate Director for Strategic Alliances at Civitas Strategies, and I am a wife of 25 years, a mom of 3, and also the mom to a new puppy. Julia?
Thank you, Jill. I'm Julia Connolly, and I'm Leading for Children's Development and Communications Associate. And I'm also a daughter and a big sister and a niece and granddaughter and a friend. And I'm also really excited to be here with you all today.
Thanks, everyone. So as we explore this simple rule, meaningful, we thought we'd start off by each having a chance to talk about what meaningful means to us. Jill, will you start us off?
Happy to. At the invitation to think about the word meaningful, I put together a few words that stuck out for me. The first word that comes to mind is connection, thinking about the connection that I have with the experience. And often that connection comes with some emotion, and it brings up memories often too, like memories that are valuable to me. The other thing that I think about with meaningful is that it's unique. It's mine. It's not necessarily the same for someone else. It's unique to me. Often strikes a chord with me. It resonates with me. And at the end of the day, I think meaningful means cherished, something that I cherish.
Thank you, Jill. When I think about the word meaningful, it feels like the why of living, the core of everything. It's the feeling that you have. It's very physiological. You feel vibrations in your body. You feel warm and fuzzy. You feel like a deep breath sometimes. And it can be like that aha moment, or this is so exciting. I can't wait to create something with this. Or it can be that moment in a relationship where you feel so seen and heard and valued, or you do that for someone else and you feel that kind of connection with them.
Thanks for that, Julia. When I think about meaningful, it matters to me. And usually it either reflects or connects to my own values, principles, beliefs, or goals, or my identity. And the other thing is, I think it's something that I find value in it, whether it's big or small. And also, typically, it is something that enhances me or somehow fulfills me.
Those are so beautiful. It's a little hard to follow. For me, when I think about meaningful, I care about it. It touches me. It connects to my soul. It connects to experiences I've had. I can relate to it, and it stretches me. When I was thinking about, you know, meaningful learning and sort of everything I know about, you know, what we do for children and for each other, I was thinking, but it can also be boring. I mean, it might be relevant to my experience, but it's like, I've been there, done that. So I think some of what I heard, Julia, when you talked about, you know, it's like the why of being, it lights you up. Nicole, when you said, you know, it doesn't matter how big or small, but it connects to what you value. And Jill, you used the word cherish, treasure. Those were such beautiful ideas to help us differentiate. Yeah, it could be meaningful, but it's not meaningful. Anybody want to respond to something you heard in the stories that people shared about their definitions?
I'm connecting to Nicole. I think you said big or small. And that really struck me. I think about that from my perspective as a mom. And so sometimes as a mom, I might plan a big event that I'm going to think is going to be meaningful and everyone's going to be involved in it, right? And then everybody's like, you know, and so I guess that's twofold. It also connects to the uniqueness and the individuality of it. And what might be meaningful to me might not be meaningful for somebody else. And there may be more meaning in the time we were all unloading the dishwasher to see how fast we can unload the dishwasher and put the dishes away, you know, just something kind of spontaneous in the moment. So the idea of meaningful can be big, it can be small, it can be unique. That's what strikes me.
I really connected, Julia, to what you said when, and even the affect in which you said it, when you said it's like the why of living, because it made me think about, for me, I think that's a very important part of life, is I want to have a life that's meaningful to me and that's meaningful for others. And listening to you phrase it that way, it just illuminated that for me and reinforced it. So I appreciated that.
I think, Jill, we often, you know, our group and our extended community, we always go back to a colleague of ours from many years ago who talks about the yellow highlighter, that let's ring the bell. That was noteworthy. Let's put a yellow highlighter. And I think this idea that you could spend a lot of time planning it and it not turn out as meaningful, you know, that might be one of the ahas of this conversation, that it doesn't have to be a big deal. It has to be important to the players. Thanks for that.
What you said, Jill, about meaningful to who, how that process can feel different to different people and have different impacts, and how one person can think they're doing something for some reason and it comes across differently. It made me think about this subcategory of that experience, which is, you know, sometimes people can get their ego wrapped up in doing something for somebody, and then it becomes about them and it puts them in a power position over that person. And then it can feel like the learning gets sucked out of it, or the connection gets sucked out of it, because you feel like, oh, I did something wrong, or oh no, I hurt somebody, or it didn't live up to what they wanted it to be. And then instead of feeling like that was for me, it feels like now we have this tension between us.
Well, you've just called up a memory. Some of you may have heard me share this before. We have another colleague, Amy Dombro. And when Amy was teaching infants and toddlers, there was a little toddler in her classroom in New York City. And the grandma came to pick the toddler up right before Thanksgiving holiday and said to Amy, the toddler's teacher, "Oh, we're so excited. We're going to go to the Thanksgiving Day parade." And she went on and on and on about how she had planned this special outing for her grandson and herself. And, you know, she was really working on it and this and this and this and this. And finally the day came and they went, obviously the next day. On Monday, the grandma came in with the little boy, and Amy, being the good teacher she was, said, "How was the parade?" And the grandma went on and on and on about how great the parade was, but they got stuck in traffic and this and that. And then she turned to the little boy and she said, "What was something you saw at the parade?" And he said, "Shoes."
Mm. Solved that perspective. Shoes.
So for her, it was meaningful. And it was meaningful for her to take her grandson, but he saw shoes.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a great segue into thinking about learning experiences that either we've participated in, we've shaped, where they were particularly meaningful. We'd love to hear from you, Jill, because we know about several.
Thanks, Judy. I'm thinking about, over the years, some of the things that our family likes to do and spending time together. We like to do some, you know, do-it-yourself home projects. And so A few years back, we decided to redo our front room and we painted a wall, we built a bookcase, got new furniture, painted the ceiling, got new light fixtures, and I documented it all on Facebook because it was a daily occurrence over a spring break of what happened each day. And one of the things that's interesting about that, it's meaningful to me, but it's also, I think, meaningful to my children. And I do know because we've talked about it. And I think one of the things that makes it meaningful, of course, we're together, we're doing something new. We don't always get to play with power tools every day. We don't always get a big bucket of paint out, but it's knowing what's interesting to them, including them, inviting them in, encouraging them to speak their mind and have a point of view. Everybody have an involvement in that. There's a little bit of novelty too, because we get to use new tools, which strikes us as interesting, but we have fun with it too. I think about you mentioning, Julia, about the dynamic of, or kind of building on the idea of if someone planned something for someone else. So I say that to say, if I had planned this, and I did plan, don't get me wrong, I did plan the front room redo, but I wasn't so boxed into exactly how it had to be. It was fluid. I had some big ideas and big goals in mind if we wanted to redo the front room. But there was room for errors. There were room for oops. There were rooms for, we bought the TV and it's too big to fit in the space that we designed it to go into. Oh, well, we'll recalibrate. And so I say that, and I hadn't thought about it till this moment, but perhaps one of the things that made it meaningful is the approach and the stance that we all took to the experience together. Maybe that's something that also made it meaningful.
It sounds to me like, if we were to generalize from your story, there was a plan. Everybody was invited in. People were not mandated to do it.
Correct.
People found their niche within the group endeavor. There was novelty. There was humor. There was trial and error. And then there was the satisfaction of completion. And that everybody gets to enjoy it. And I think that's, you know, when I think about learning experiences that I shaped for children and learning experiences that I've done, you know, with groups of adults, I think that joint endeavor, inclusivity, multiple perspectives, open-ended, you know, room for mistakes, those are all like really key ingredients to making something meaningful. Who else would like to share an experience that you either witnessed or participated in that was particularly meaningful and what made it that way?
Before sharing a story, I wanted to note a connection I made when I was listening to you, Jill. Yesterday, in one of our Optimistic Leader book study groups, we had a conversation about the difference between intention and planning. And we shared what that meant to each of us. And we kind of came together as a group to the understanding that a plan is more about the tasks, the step-by-step of how you get something done. It's more tangible. But the intention is about how it feels, what the experience is like, and what you want people to relationally get out of it. And I think that was really evident in your example, Jill, where you had clear objectives. You had a renovation project to do. You had tasks that needed to be done in order to complete this project. Really, the intention was to have a family experience together and to connect and to tap into your strengths and see each other and just be together.
Thank you for that, Julia, that intention versus planning. I'm really intrigued in thinking more about that as it relates to meaningful. And Judy, I think something you said many years ago for me was, or at least how I take it away from how you said it, is whose agenda is it? Mm-hmm. Thinking about when we're working with children or in our interactions in parenting or even in relationships, right? Whose agenda is it? Maybe this is an oversimplified example, but is my intention to go eat at this particular restaurant, or is it my intention to be with my husband to have dinner together, just the two of us in a place where I don't have to do dishes, you know? And sometimes it may be that I want that particular dish at the restaurant, but most often it's, I want to be with him. And so I think about that in terms of whose agenda is it in that planning and that intention, which makes me think about meaningful in a different light. Thank you for that, Julia.
Well, and your reflection, Jill, invites me into a different space too, because I'm not sure I would think about going out to dinner with my husband, Andy, as a learning experience. But the way that you just presented it actually is, in a sense, because the fixed mindset would be, I got to eat this dish in this restaurant, and everything else is sort of secondary. In the other, it's, I want to spend time with Andy or Gary, our husbands, to have a time, because the time is opening curiosity to possibilities. And it's meaningful because we are connecting in a different way. We're having an experience together. We're going to be surprised by some things. And I like that. I like the idea of thinking about it that way. Nicole?
Sure. My 12-year-old Gracie loves to cook. And what is meaningful to her, and I think what has really happened to me in this, is understanding why it's meaningful to her. So Gracie has been cooking since I wanted her to. So she's been cooking since she's been about 3 years old, with or without my assistance. What I've come to realize in our time together, for her, the meaning is in the experience. Gracie is less concerned about how her meal comes out, and she's more concerned about what she gets to experiment with as she's cooking. And she loves to cook from scratch, and she loves to bake. And so she's less concerned with the cookies coming out and being uniformed in shape, being real palatable, because that's something I'm concerned about. She's more concerned about, oh, they're not sticking together as much this time. You know what? I think maybe I put a little bit too much oil in them. Or perhaps she decided to put an extra egg. Or in one case, she decided that, you know what? I wonder if Jell-O would be a good binder here. And she finds so much meaning in the experiences. And so she is what I call an adventurous cook. Now, she can cook a good meal and it can turn out good. But more often than not, she is going to go in there and say, I wonder what would happen if I did this. And It is so meaningful to her, and some of our best times, actually. We have so much fun laughing and exploring the output of that.
Nicole, I'm inspired by you, the way that you slow down and noticed what is it about cooking, you know, and just didn't stop at she wants to cook. But it's the combination of flavors and textures and mixing together and how they integrate. And I'm just tickled to hear about the Jell-O to see how that would turn out. But to notice that that's the aspect of cooking that she's interested in, and what a creative space, you know, to allow her to express herself too. And I'm thinking about from your perspective, and we know each other well. And so I know that then, as you know that about Gracie, then you create opportunities so that she has access to Jell-O if she wants to put it into the next packs of cookies. And what inspires me by that is, it inspires my parenting, but it also inspires me. I'm no longer, you know, working with a group of children, but if I were, and you know that, you know, that you find out the hook, you find out that curiosity thing, how you can then build upon that to create more opportunities.
You have a chef in your house who has definitely found meaningful learning opportunities in his culinary pursuits. What was his spark, and how did you nurture that as a meaningful learning opportunity for him?
Jack, my youngest, is now 15, and he too started cooking when he was young, you know, and part of it was just kind of him being in the same space and me, how quickly can I get dinner on the table for the whole house? And so it built upon his curiosity. And it's interesting, this transition from preteen to now teen, and he needs his space and he needs his time. And I have noticed that he uses the kitchen kind of as a place to retreat. He does not want me in there with him. So, you know, and so tuning into that to kind of go, that's his space to create, it's his space to experiment. his thing of late has been stir fry. So thinking about how many different things he can, you know, put into stir fry. And so giving him the tools and the space to do that and recognizing, you know, in his development in these teen years that he does need that retreat space, but it doesn't always have to be in the room or doesn't always have to be with technology, but he could have a retreat in the kitchen too, if I stay out of it.
That is so beautiful. I'm so glad you shared that. Wow. Julia.
I'm thinking about an experience that happened for me last night. My mom and I are preparing to sing Ave Maria together at my grandfather's funeral on Friday. And singing is something that's really important to both of us. I don't have a lot of performance experience. I've trained a little, but she trained a lot and she has performed a lot. And we've never done it together, though. And my grandfather and her sang growing up together all the time. And that was really meaningful to them. And I always kind of wanted to have that experience with my mom, but there wasn't really an opportunity. So last night we were rehearsing together and she was playing the piano and warming me up. And she pointed out how meaningful it was for her to have that experience with me, that she was able to offer something that was important to both of us. And normally she's the one in my shoes getting warmed up by somebody else. And she was able to do that for me and with me. And you know, singing is a very vulnerable experience. And so it also had that added layer. And just that we're both really nervous about it. She hasn't sang in a long time. Again, I don't really like performing, but it matters to both of us a lot. And we're in it together and we're scared about it together. And it feels like it's brought to light this idea of passing something on and what that really means, and that it doesn't necessarily mean passing something on in a particular concrete form. You know, often people pass recipes or just different things that are like, I want you to know this and have this and keep the legacy going. And it can feel a little ego-oriented or a little like it's not about the relationship. And so I think identifying why you want to pass something along and being intentional about how you do it so that it really does feel like that moment of connection and discovering together, seeing a way of doing it or thinking about it that is adaptive. It's really special.
Beautiful story. In this conversation about our simple rule, you know, when we wrote this book, you know, I'm looking at the book right now and it says, plan meaningful learning experiences. You know, Jill, you didn't wake up that day and say, I'm going to plan a meaningful learning experience. And there wasn't a day, Nicole, when you woke up and said, I'm going to introduce Gracie to the kitchen to plan a meaningful learning experience. And neither you, Julia, nor your mom said, oh, okay, we're going to plan a meaningful learning experience. And yet we identified so many critical factors of the why of what makes learning meaningful. And so much of it that we've talked about goes back to, Jill, your very first word was connection when we talked about the definition. And you said it connects to emotion. And emotion, as you said it, immediately sort of got to what I said, which was, it touches me. Everybody has talked about many different ways of it touching you. It's practical. It makes us laugh. You know, it helps us bond. It carries on a tradition. It gives us a sense of purpose. You know, so I think that connection and those emotions are vast. And I think too often we probably spend too much time planning learning experiences for everybody without the intention of wondering about what's the feeling state we're looking to evoke. I'll pause there. Does anyone want to add on or respond?
I think that speaks so much to the relational aspect of learning experiences, Judy, as you talk, that as much as sometimes it feels like they're two separate things, that really they're not. And we know that to be true. I just heard in what you were saying that That is such a core and critical piece of it. And it made me wonder what might happen or what could happen if we enter this idea of meaningful learning experiences in general, and really ask ourselves, what do we want to feel and what do we want the other person to feel on the other side of this? So it's beyond what I want someone to learn or know or to be able to do. Really, what do I want them to feel? You know, Julia, you talked about the feeling in your body. You know, I want them to be buzzing in a good way. And it made me think about it.
Nicole, you backed in magnificently to one of our questions, which is, how can we use intention to create meaningful learning opportunities? And I think that the strategy you offered is to not just say, what do I want them to learn, but how do I want them to feel as they're learning? And then how do I want them to feel about what they're learning? And I think also at the beginning, you know, Jill, you said, I cherish it. You know, if we entered with intention of saying, how can I make this experience something that people will treasure? And Julia said that when it's meaningful to her, she can't wait to do something with it. And that to me feels like a way that we can use intention, that, you know, kind of thinking about how will people use this? And what kind of excitement will the experience include to create that sense of it's going to keep going? Comments or thoughts as we begin to come to the end of our wonderful conversation?
I'm thinking about something that our LFC colleague Serene said. I'll read her quote. She said, discovering what's meaningful to us and to others begins with a pause and a commitment to activate curiosity. When we take a moment to notice what is important to ourselves and others, we share the message that we all matter. And I think that's a really important piece of it. Like Nicole, you described, you noticed what part of cooking was important to Gracie. And it's what matters to them, being curious about how they process information and creating experiences based on the individual, attuning to that individual. So it's a really mutual process.
All of the stories that were shared in this conversation had to do with how meaningful learning connects us to our social world. And this idea that it's often more meaningful when we're doing it either with others or for others, not always. And then that as we watch the excitement of someone who's engaging in meaningful learning, it's contagious. So thank you all. At Leading for Children, our approach to building strong communities for us and for children starts with each one of us. So we hope our community takes off from this podcast conversation and starts conversations with lots of other people about meaningful learning opportunities that you've had, that you might have, that you want to have together. Thanks so much, Jill, Nicole, and Julia, for this conversation. And thank you all for joining our conversation about meaningful learning experiences, another of the 11 simple rules. Please check out the book at www.leadingforchildren.org. You can stay in the loop with LFC by subscribing to our newsletter. And please also stay tuned for our next national conversation, which is an interactive conversation scheduled for what day is it, Julia?
May 16th from 4 to 5 Eastern.
Perfect. So we'll send more information about that, and you can see more about it on social media. Thank you all for coming today.